from ABC News, World News This Week. I'm Chuck Sievertson in New York. Coming up, President Biden on the world stage.
Democracies of the world are standing together to tackle the toughest challenges.
Ransom recovery.
Investigators reviewed a public ledger that showed the payment and the cryptocurrency wallet used by the hackers.
Scathing January 6th report.
Literally, there were posts floating around with maps of the tunnels under the Capitol.
Delving into the tax records of the rich.
Jeff Bezos paid zero in federal income tax in 2007 and 2011.
Two arrested in a road rage shooting.
Now it's time for the system to do what it's designed to do, and that is hold people accountable.
The people and events that made headlines when World News This Week continues. It's his first trip overseas in office and the first in-person gathering of world leaders since the start of the pandemic. President Biden is in the UK for the G7 and NATO summits. ABC's Karen Travers, the only network radio correspondent traveling with the president for his full trip, says he's bringing a message of restoring American leadership.
That's been the big message from the White House. It's one of the first things the president said when he landed in England earlier this week.
We're going to make it clear that the United States is back and democracies of the world are standing together to tackle the toughest challenges and the issues that matter most to our future, that we're committed to leading with strength.
And that's a big part of his message, convincing these European allies that the United States is with them and that this is a turning of the page from the 4 years of the Trump administration.
With the European Union leaders, I'll discuss how the United States can work with Europe to address a full range of issues that require the full strength of our transatlantic partnership, including working together to shape the new rules for the 21st century economies.
The president's here to repair relationships with allies and relationships that he says were damaged over the past 4 years. Now, that's, of course, a very political perspective. President Trump did have some solid relationships with some of these leaders on certain issues. But overall, you certainly get this sense that the G7 leaders are eager to engage with President Biden, but they're also a little wary and they're waiting to see what he does before, I think, that full embrace. Boris Johnson earlier this week was just striking in his lavishing of praise of President Biden.
Everybody's absolutely thrilled to see you.
We're thrilled to meet your wife.
He said that it's a breath of fresh air and that it's wonderful to listen to the Biden administration. So this maybe is working out for President Biden if he's trying to convince these allies that he's with them. They like what they're hearing so far.
We're going to help lead the world out of this pandemic working alongside our global partners.
I think the big issue that these world leaders are discussing, no surprise, is the COVID pandemic. And from that comes the recovery of the global economy. The president, before sitting down with the G7 world leaders, announced that the United States would be donating $500 million doses of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine to COVAX, which is the global immunization effort.
We need to attack this virus globally as well. This is about our responsibility, our humanitarian obligation to save as many lives as we can, and our responsibility to our values.
And the president, when he announced this, framed this as part of the message of the United States is back. He says that under his leadership, America is once again a global leader. And on this, the biggest challenge facing the planet right now, the United States has the ability and is in a position to take such a big step like this.
In times of trouble, Americans reach out to offer help and offer a helping hand. That's who we are.
And he's urging the other countries to come along. The United Kingdom announced they would be donating 100 million doses to COVAX. So, you know, the president is trying to say, we're doing this and now everybody has to join us. And so it's interesting, this whole America is back message. You can apply it to everything that the leaders are talking about. COVID, the global economy, climate change, Afghanistan, all of these big things on the table. The president's really trying to hammer home that singular message.
As world leaders give the global fight against COVID-19 a shot in the arm, the CDC is investigating a possible rare vaccine side effect in teens. Details from ABC's Marcus Moore.
An expert panel taking a closer look at reports of heart inflammation among young people after they received the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. The CDC now reporting preliminary data of 226 cases of myocarditis in people younger than 30 out of millions of people vaccinated. So far, there is no firm link to the vaccine. Cases appear to be mild and go away with treatment. Moderna joining Pfizer in applying for authorization for its vaccine for 12 to 17-year-olds. Just 28% of that age group has gotten their first dose. Some parents are still not ready to vaccinate their children.
I would prefer to wait just to see how things go. As of now, I don't want to even consider it.
Pfizer and Moderna now testing lower doses of the vaccine in children 11 and younger. And after states warned large batches of unused doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine could soon expire, the FDA extended the shelf life for the vaccine by an extra 6 weeks.
ABC's Marcus Moore. Vice President Kamala Harris also meeting with world leaders this week, traveling to Guatemala and Mexico to address the root causes of migration. ABC News Chief White House Correspondent Cecilia Vega has more.
On her first foreign trip as vice president, Kamala Harris issuing a direct warning to anyone considering making the illegal journey north.
Do not come. Do not come. The United States will continue to enforce our laws and secure our border.
Tapped by the president to tackle the root causes of migration as illegal crossings at the southern border reach nearly 750,000 people, levels not seen in decades. The vice president there alongside Guatemala's president, promising the U.S. will help tamp down on violence and corruption, which could take years.
If you come to our border, you will be turned back.
This as the Biden administration is still investigating the fallout from former President Trump's immigration policies. According to a new report out, more than 3,900 children were separated from their families under Trump's controversial zero-tolerance policy. And to this day, more than 2,000 kids still have not been reunited.
ABC's Cecilia Vega. A month after a ransomware attack crippled the nation's largest fuel pipeline, the Justice Department announced it has recovered the majority of the ransom paid to a criminal hacking group.
The hackers didn't intend to close a major fuel spigot. The point of infecting Colonial Pipeline with ransomware was to get paid. And by seizing more than half the ransom, the acting U.S. attorney in San Francisco, Stephanie Hines, said,
"The extortionists we'll never see this money."
The FBI seized more than $2 million worth of Bitcoin paid to the Russia-based hackers behind a cyber attack that caused panic buying and extra fuel stops for some airlines. Investigators reviewed a public ledger that showed the payment and the cryptocurrency wallet used by the hackers. Aaron Katursky, ABC News, New York.
Colonial Pipeline CEO Joseph Blount told a Senate committee that paying ransomware to cyber hackers was the toughest decision he's had to make professionally. The FBI director told a House committee that the companies shouldn't be paying ransom at all. More from ABC News Chief Justice Correspondent Pierre Thomas.
The FBI director with a stark warning. Ransomware attacks costing U.S. companies millions of dollars have tripled in the last year, and that may be just the beginning.
So the scale of this is something that I don't think this country's really ever seen anything quite like it, and it's going to get much worse.
Ray says the FBI is investigating more than 100 ransomware attacks, each case with dozens if not hundreds of victims, and he's urging companies not to give in to extortion.
Companies should not pay the ransom for a number of reasons. It encourages more of this kind of activity. You could pay the ransom and not get your system back.
U.S. companies have been under incredible pressure. Food giant JBS now confirming it paid $11 million to cyber criminals after a ransomware attack closed its meat plants across the U.S. But the Homeland Security Secretary, in an exclusive interview at his agency's Cyber Command Center, acknowledged that companies are being put in an impossible situation.
We've lost $350 million in ransomware alone this year, more than 300% increase over last year.
Many companies simply are not doing enough, but some are starting to get the message. Some even going as far as hiring their own professional hackers to hunt for weaknesses.
ABC's Pierre Thomas. Demanding answers about the seizure of Democrats' data, the Justice Department Inspector General will investigate the secret seizure of House Democrats' communications data. Details from ABC's Rena Roy.
ABC News has confirmed former President Trump's Justice Department subpoenaed the communications data of at least two Democratic members of Congress and members of their family, including Congressman Adam Schiff, a vocal Trump critic who was then the top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, now speaking out on CNN.
Shocked on the one hand, not surprised on the other.
Sources say prosecutors under Attorney General Jeff Sessions subpoenaed Apple for the data in 2018. Congressman Eric Swalwell telling CNN he's the other committee member who was targeted.
I'm not above the law, just like no one else is above the law. But to go after this many people, boy, that feels like a Donald Trump-driven investigation. And I don't have a lot of faith in his ability to fairly interpret the law.
The New York Times says the data resulted in no evidence connecting Schiff or Swalwell to the leaks. The paper reports former Attorney General Bill Barr revived the investigation when he took over the Justice Department. Barr and Sessions have not commented on the reports.
ABC's Rena Roy. A new report this week delved into why park police cleared protesters in Washington, D.C. last year.
The decision to forcibly clear protesters from Lafayette Park during Black Lives Matter protests last summer was not, an Interior Department watchdog said, motivated by former President Trump's photo op in front of St. John's Church. Instead, Inspector General Mark Greenblatt said U.S. Park Police planned to clear the area to put up fencing.
We did not find evidence that a potential presidential visit to the park or the St. John's Church influenced the park police's decision-making or their deployment, in their operation to clear out the park.
Greenblatt's report said U.S. Park Police violated no laws or policies, but found warnings to disperse were inaudible. The report did not determine whether it was appropriate to use force against largely peaceful protesters. Aaron Katursky, ABC News.
A bipartisan Senate report finds security and intelligence failures at every level led to the January 6th Capitol riot. More from ABC News congressional correspondent Rachel Scott.
USA!
The five-month investigation painting a dark picture, revealing critical breakdowns in communication and preparation among the Capitol Police, FBI, DHS, and Department of Defense. The panel finding that weeks before the attack, Capitol Police intelligence uncovered information about the threat of violence, including a blog post with a map of the Capitol, encouraging Trump supporters to surround every building with a tunnel entrance or exit. One comment saying, "This is do or die, bring your guns." But the full scope of that information was never fully conveyed to Capitol Police leadership or its officers, who then came under attack. Senator Amy Klobuchar was one of four senators who led the review.
Is there any reason why the Capitol should have been left vulnerable on January 6th?
No. Literally, there were posts floating around with maps of the tunnels under the Capitol.
The report laying out 20 recommendations, including the selection of a new Capitol police chief, the department responding.
This department is already making major changes to protect our most valuable asset, which is you and everybody on Capitol grounds.
But the report did not address what led up to the attack, including if former President Donald Trump's words provoked the violence we saw that day, or any contributing factors in the weeks and months leading up to the attack. Renewed calls from Democrats and some Republicans to investigate what led to this, even after efforts for a January 6th commission failed. But it has already failed once in the Senate, blocked by Republicans. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell telling me it's a non-starter.
What we needed was a quick solution to the problem on security and pursuit of those who broke the law, which the Justice Department assures me is going on very, very aggressively.
Attorney General Merrick Garland says the IRS is investigating a leak after ProPublica detailed how little the wealthiest Americans pay in taxes. ABC News Start Here podcast host Brad Milkey talked to ProPublica senior reporter and editor Jesse Eisinger about what's in the report.
Jeff Bezos paid zero in federal income tax in 2007 and 2011, and Elon Musk paid zero in federal income tax in 2018, and Michael Bloomberg and George Soros and Carl Icahn, they also paid zero in federal
income
tax.
You got their tax returns or their tax numbers.
We have the tax returns and many of the schedules, many of the things that have information that flow into the tax returns for thousands of the wealthiest Americans covering more than 15 years.
Can you walk me through, as if I'm a fourth grader, and just explain how this works?
Well, so the first thing is that they don't really take salary. They take a middle-class salary. Jeff Bezos gets something like $80,000 a year in a salary. Hmm. So instead, what they're doing is they allow their wealth to accumulate. The stock goes up, and they sell very rarely, or they sell a little bit here and there. So how are they living? If their wealth is accumulating, and they're not selling, and they're not getting salary, well, often they're borrowing. They're borrowing to fund their lifestyles.
Oh.
And you borrow at low rates, and you never sell, and you keep control of your company, and you never have to pay capital gains tax. And it's a really glorious thing until you die. And there are a variety of tax advantages for the ultra wealthy when they die, and they can avoid capital gains tax and avoid estate tax when they die. The borrowing is actually reduces the amount of the estate. So it's a win-win-win. Someone like Carl Icahn has borrowed billions of dollars. And what he does with that borrowed money is that sort of flows through to his business. And he is allowed to take that money and he invests it and it amplifies his returns. It juices his returns. It's leverage. It's like us putting a down payment on a house and getting 80% from the bank. And then the interest on that borrowing, Icahn gets to deduct it from his income and pay no taxes.
Wow.
So the taxpayer is subsidizing his speculation.
ProPublica's Jesse Eisinger. After weeks of meetings and counteroffers, infrastructure negotiations between President Biden and Republican Senator Shelley Moore Capito broke down this week.
The White House changed. They moved the goalposts on us more than a few times. I've said that publicly for several weeks now. And I don't know where they get to the pay for us on this.
Immediately, a group of bipartisan senators started negotiations, and by Friday, they announced a deal.
The Senate compromise deal spends nearly a trillion less on infrastructure than the president and many Democrats want, and it takes money from the COVID relief bill the president fought hard to pass. The compromise would take unused COVID money, including the extra $300 a week in unemployment that Republican states are sending back, and use that to pay for new roads and bridges. It would also raise the current gas tax along with inflation. The White House says it has a lot of questions.
ABC's Andy Field in Washington. Proof that the economy is bouncing back from the pandemic. Everything is more expensive. ABC News Chief Business Correspondent Rebecca Jarvis reports.
From the grocery store to the gas station and the dealership, with the economy bouncing back from the pandemic, prices are soaring. Inflation up 5% in May from a year ago, the largest increase since the Great Recession. This coming as weekly jobless claims fell to their lowest levels since March 2020. Prices rising in nearly every category. In May, beef up 2.3%, cereals and bakery goods up 0.5%, clothing prices up 5.6%, and gasoline up 56% from a year ago. But one of the biggest increases of all, and a key driver of the overall surge in inflation, the price of used cars up almost 30%. With the supply of cars hit by decreased production during the pandemic and exacerbated by a global shortage of semiconductors, a key component in cars.
ABC's Rebecca Jarvis. California Governor Gavin Newsom says his office is appealing a federal judge's decision to overturn the state's long-standing ban on assault weapons, accusing the judge of being a lobbyist for the NRA.
Judge Benitez, and Matty, you are right, is a stone-cold ideologue. He's a wholly owned subsidiary of the gun lobby and the National Rifle Association.
U.S. District Judge Roger Benitez wrote that, quote, like the Swiss Army knife, the popular AR-15 rifle is a perfect combination of home defense weapon and homeland defense equipment. Two people were charged this week in a Southern California road rage shooting that left a six-year-old boy dead and a community looking for answers. ABC's Alex Stone has details.
Chuck, it was an arrest over 2 weeks in the making.
I'm pleased to report two suspects have been apprehended and will be appropriately charged in the murder of Aiden Leo.
California Highway Patrol Assistant Chief there, Don Goodbrand, making the announcement. The boyfriend and girlfriend arrested 24-year-old Marcus Ariz and 23-year-old Winnie Lee. They're accused in the road rage incident 3 weeks ago of firing a single shot from a handgun into the back of the car driven by the mother of 6-year-old Aiden Leos. The bullet going through the trunk, through the back seat, and into Aiden in his booster seat, killing him. Orange County District Attorney Todd Spitzer.
I was unequivocally clear with them. Turn yourself in. Turn yourself in. And they didn't. And they didn't. And so now it's time for the system to do what it's designed to do, and that is hold people accountable.
It took tips and police work to track down the pair.
This particular Golf VW is somewhat rare here, and there is about 140 of those specific vehicles registered in the greater Southern California area.
Now, Ariz is accused of being the passenger in the car and firing the gun. He's facing murder charges. Lee is accused of being the driver. She's facing accessory to a crime charges. The arrest coming one day after Aiden was laid to rest. His sister, Alexis.
Because of the monsters that took Aiden's life, I will never get to hug my brother again. We are supposed to grow up together and help each other through life. He didn't deserve this. He deserved to have a beautiful life.
Aiden's mother, Joanna.
To my Aiden. I love watching you sleep in the morning, as you're the most beautiful boy I've ever seen.
The two suspects are due back in court in the coming days. Ariz is being held on $2 million bail, his girlfriend on $500,000.
The western U.S. is in the grips of a severe drought. ABC News senior meteorologist Rob Marciano.
We're into the dry season, maybe some afternoon thunderstorms in July and August, but that rarely puts a dent in what has become a pretty serious drought across especially the west. The drought monitor now measuring 21% of the country in extreme or exceptional drought. If you take the state of California alone, 75% of that state plus is under extreme drought.
Coming up, wedding delay no more when World News This Week continues. As more Americans get vaccinated against COVID-19, more industries are rebounding, including travel, restaurants, and now the bridal industry. ABC's Sherry Preston takes a look.
This might be the song of the summer and the fall and the winter. With more COVID shots in arms and restrictions relaxing, couples who had to put their weddings on hold last year are now fueling a wedding boom.
We are seeing about a 25 to 40% increase in weddings this year.
That's Kelly Cook at David's Bridal. She says finding a spot to get married is getting tough.
We do business at David's Bridal with about 5,000 venues across the United States. 90% of them are booked up on every Saturday between April and October right now.
So with Saturdays pretty much out all over the place, couples are going with different days.
They're getting married on Friday nights. They're telling their families, take Monday off. We're doing a Sunday night wedding.
Kelly says she's in the same boat as a lot of families.
One of my triplets just proposed to his girlfriend. They're getting married on a Friday night in December.
And hashtag Friday wedding already picking up on Instagram.
ABC's Sherry Preston. And those are the people and events that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Stephanie Pawlowski. I'm Chuck Sievertson, ABC News, New York.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.